So in getting started, let's get with mastermind groups and set intent for the day. What do you want to experience? And before you do, just so you know, Chris and I will be spending most of the day on meta programs, maybe the whole day. And meta programs are really the way we sort information and make sense out of the world, the filters we're wearing. It's how we can detect what motivates us and other people. And by the end of the day, you're going to learn a really, I think, fantastic set of skills that to me are some of the really deeply useful things you can put into place right away. So
we thought we would start off, before we dive into meta programs, with an open frame. And what an open frame is it's an opportunity to cover or talk about some of the things that you might be curious about with NLP. And I know Tim told me that one of the things that came up yesterday is that some of you are wondering, when you're working with a person, where do you start, what do you do, and how does that process even begin? Because you're going to use different processes sometimes with different people, but what is the structure that's involved or the procedure when you start working with a person? So we will talk about that. And are there any other questions about NLP before we dive into that? And then we'll dive into meta programs. Yes, Lance.
Curious about Tony Robbins and his use of NLP and is his stuff also connected with all?
Yeah.
Kind of started with that, and when he's taking it through his own kind of branding and thought process. I'm just curious about that.
Well, Tony is great. You know, he was one of John Grinder and Richard Bandler's first students when they started doing NLP. And actually, it was John Grinder that gave him the idea to do the firewalks. And so he wrote the book Unlimited Power many, many years ago. And as you all know, it was a huge success. And then he took off with his own brand of NLP, which he calls Neuroassociative Conditioning. I'm glad to hear, though, he still gives NLP credit. He was actually on the Larry King show a couple of years ago, and Larry's like, how did you get into all of this?
And actually, Larry said, you're such an amazing guy. What are you really doing? And he said, well, it's all NLP.
And my jaw just about dropped. This was on, like, you know, national. Like, and Larry was like, well, what is NLP, Tony? And I heard those words slip out of his mouth, neuro-linguistic programming, and I was like, wow, I wish I had recorded it in that moment for posterity.
Because for a while, he made it look like he'd invented it all, and he called it Tony's techniques and that kind of thing. And then Richard Bandler felt like his intellectual property was being stolen, so they had some kind of dispute, and basically Tony paid him some licensing fees, and That's how that works. Tony Robbins is what I think he does best. He's a master of working with groups and eliciting states from groups. And to me, it's like probably the pinnacle of what a motivational speaker can be, at least the ones I've seen.
And we've had a lot of people over the years that have gone through his trainings, go through ours. I'm sure some of you have trained with
Tony. How many of you have been with Tony at some point, just out of curiosity?
And we've even had some of his trainers come train with us, which has been interesting and fun to have them in our program. So he's great. The thing is most of the programs he does are only 4 days long, and he has his own brand of what he calls neuroassociative conditioning, and so he's kind of skimming the surface, and he's really great at motivating people, but what we hear is sometimes people have a difficult time sustaining that motivation. And so what we've been told, especially by his trainers that have come through our programs, is they come to NLP California to really learn how to do it and all the nuts and bolts. And so if I was going to differentiate us, that's how I would say. But we certainly respect him.
He's certainly a good model for working with groups and really eliciting states and getting people excited. And so, what to do when? And how many of you have had that kind of question? It's like, you've got a whole book full of ideas now, right? And so, I'll give you the answer that probably won't be as satisfying as you hope.
So, although you can think of it as he's giving you this answer, it's a somewhat of a formula or a procedure to work with when you are working with people. So as Tim's talking, hold that framework that this is a procedure or a formula for when you start working with someone, and this is the first step right here.
And it's what you might think of as thinking in NLP, so to speak. NLP is all based on, originally based on the TOTE, which Damon presented last time, test, operate, test, exit. Do y'all remember that? And that idea is that constitutes a behavior. So if there's something out in the world, we'll do an initial test. Is the present state and the desired state the same or not? And if it's not, then we operate on it somehow. And when we're finished operating on it, we test it again. Is it done? If it's done, then we exit and move on to something else. So that idea was what Bandler and Grinder began to apply to a lot of different kinds of human behavior in their modeling processes and pulled out a lot of the techniques that you've learned. So in a way, this is kind of thinking in that. So if you think of present state, this is where you are now. What's going on now? And sometimes people think when they see this, present state means the problem. But a lot of present states are not a problem. Think of all the present states you've got that you like, right? I mean, if you think you're dressed right now, which is appropriate for being in this room, so that's a good state, right? Wouldn't be so good if you weren't.
Well, that doesn't say anything about a desired state.
So present state. When does a present state get to be a problem? When does it become a problem?
It's painful, or if you suffer in it, if you don't like it, that's already stops you from feeling good.
Okay, that could be part of it. It could be feelings.
Francis?
Sorry?
If it's unresourceful.
If it's unresourceful. Now, both of those are kind of presupposing something. It's different than the desired state, right. And so you're presupposing that in what you say, but if there's a gap between present state and desired state, then our goal with NLP is to do whatever it takes to close the gap. And yesterday I talked about, in a lot of fields there are fixed procedures that lead to variable outcomes, and with NLP we want to get a fixed outcome and then vary our behavior to get it. So we'll start with the present state, and this is all those W's, where, when, with whom, and how. This is not a W, but it's one of those ideas of what's going on now. So you need to get a clear idea of this.
So when you're working with someone and they come to you and you'd say, okay, well, tell me, so what's going on? You know, how long has it been happening for? Where does it happen? When does it happen? Who does it happen with? So you're getting the present state. And of course you can do this very conversationally. If you're a manager, you can do it with your coworkers, or if you're a coach, you can have that dialogue, or even a parent with your children, you can ask those questions. So, well, gosh, tell me, so what's going on? How long has it been happening for you? When does it happen? Where does it happen? Who does it happen with? And so what you're doing is you are gathering what is going on for them in that present situation. And sometimes you can think of this as the problem state too, although we tend to stick with present state.
Yeah, because sometimes the present state's not a problem. Sometimes, remember last night what we were doing with the anchor integration? We were saying, think of something you already do well and you can add even more resources to it. So with NLP, it can be building high performance states. A lot of what the coaching Chris and I do in Japan is. It's not about fixing problems or doing therapy and stuff like that. It's about how do you take somebody that's performing well and helping them amp up their level of performance so they do even better. So you can take, the thing I love about NLP, it's not necessarily problem-oriented. It can also be oriented towards some kind of improvement no matter how well you're doing.
For example, one of our participants in our Japanese coaching course, she already spoke a little bit English, but she wanted to speak it even better. And so that was her present state, so it wasn't necessarily a problem. It was more that she wanted to enhance her language speaking skills. Yeah.
So with present state, we always want to know what's the problem, where, when, and with whom. In other words, we have to have a context. And this is one that a lot of people don't understand, but without a context, things don't have meaning. If I say, it's not working, what is that telling you? You don't know what I'm talking about until I put it in a context, right? if I said the fuel injection system on my car is not working properly, now you know exactly what it is. Also, you want to, of course, be gathering the sort of taking the vital signs of the person you're with. When they have a problem, what's their state of mind? What's their physiology? Where are their IQs going?
Color in their face, inconsistencies with how they're moving.
What kind of meta model patterns are you hearing? Today you'll learn meta programs. So we have a lot of ways of assessing where somebody is right now. And this is our initial test on here.
So you can think of this as an assessment. And again, whenever you're working with anyone, whether it's a coach client or it could be a coworker or even your child, you can go through this sequence of questions and also, as Tim said, watching for state and physiology and getting their vital signs. I like the way you said that. And it gives you an idea of where the person is in that moment. So that's the first place you start, is getting those vital signs and asking all those questions.
So it's kind of like, what's up, right? Figure it out. But you want it in a detailed enough way. And this is where the sensory acuity that we've been working on is so important. You know, if you can, you want to assess that state. And Rashmi gave us a great demonstration last night when she said, you know, I want to be strong. I want to be direct. And you stood direct. And I said, what's that like? You look, didn't that look powerful, that state? And so that's an assessment of the desired state. So we want to, this all maps across to here. What's this desired state? What are all these things in the desired state? Of course, there's more here that we could add, submodalities, we could add Milton model patterns, you know, all of those things. Desired state, what are the three questions we always ask to get the desired state?
It starts with the W. What, where, when. Yep.
What's the first one?
Where?
No?
What?
What do you want?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, what do you want?
Good job.
Always.
What is your outcome? What do you want?
So, and this has some conditions, right? What are the conditions? Do you remember? Needs to be stated in the positive, yeah. Horacio
good job,
said.
Horacio.
If it's a, it needs to be what you do want, not what you don't want.
So stated in the positive, if you didn't hear, what you do want, not what you don't want.
By the way, if somebody says, often people start with what they don't want, because that's just the way they're thinking about it.
I don't want to be depressed anymore. I'm just so sick of being depressed.
Now, if she says, I don't want to be depressed anymore, what is she telling her brain to do? Well, it seems almost like don't think of blue kind of thing. But it's also, if I said, you can't sit there, I'm sorry. And you say, okay, where do you go now? You say, well, I'll sit there in the corner. I go, no, you can't sit there either. Well, how about that one? No. We had one time we lived in a, what do they call it? A planned urban development, which means we had a house.
A PUD, that was, a PUD.
It was a PUD.
And it was awful.
Vivian will know what that is. But anyway, it was really a nice setup in a lot of ways. It's like we lived in a park and we all had our individual houses. The problem was we had a homeowners association. And we wanted to do some planting because our grass was too shaded and it created some, you know, patchy lawn. So we wrote a little plan to the homeowners committee and said, we want to plant this. And this guy said, no, you can't do that. And so because it didn't match their ideas of what it should look like. So we came back and said, well, how about this one? They go, nope, can't do that. Finally, we said, well, what can we do? And they said, no, you decide. It's your place. But it was like, all we were getting told is what we could not do, which is totally useless, you know, in a way. So if you're telling your brain what you don't want, it's not telling you what to do. So what else? There has to be initiated and controlled by you, too. So if I say I want my employees to feel motivated to, you know, really work enthusiastically, is that something that I can control? Can I make them do that? Now, I can behave in certain ways that might increase that, but I can't really get them to do that necessarily. So it needs to be, what do you want? What's the second thing you always want to find out? Yes?
I was just going to say with the want, sometimes people get stuck in their mind that they don't want to say the thing that they don't want. because they know that, oh, I shouldn't start there. It's totally fine to start there, yeah, as long as you don't stay there.
Yeah, good point. That's true. But NLPers will do that. The naive public will be happy to start with what they don't want, usually. But what's the second one you always want to ask?
Ecology? That's the last one.
Context?
Yeah, like where?
Well, kind of.
When? Is
that's
certainly part of
that.
No?
What do you need to get there?
No.
How do you know when you have?
How do you know?
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Evidence. And it's such a critical piece, and it's one that's left out of most every model except this one. What are your evidence procedures?
What will you see? What will you hear? What will you feel once you achieve that outcome? So another what question. What will you see? What will you hear? What will you feel?
Will we smell or taste if that's appropriate? So we want it sensory-based. And if, you know, if you ask most people, well, what I want is this, and you say, well, how would you know you're there? And they go, I'll just feel it. I'll know it. And there's some truth to that, but how specifically will you know it? So you want to meta-model that.
How will you know when you get
it? What will you,
you
see? What will you hear? What will you experience? What do you feel in your body?
It makes it more tangible. Good comment, Horacio.
It needs to be concrete. And Horacio is saying the third one, which is, again, context. Where, when, and with whom. That allows you to visualize it. If you have a vague concept in your brain, you don't have a goal. You have a concept. So if I say, I want to, instead of feeling depressed, I want to feel the joy of life. My brain will go, okay, cool. But there's, can you make a picture of that, really? I mean, we can make something up, but notice if I say, I want to be a better communicator, you have a vague idea of what I'm talking about. But if I say, you know, I want to be able to sit down with my 12-year-old son and have a heart-to-heart conversation that where I really hear what he's saying and he hears what I'm saying, we go away feeling good about it. That's a really specific context. That'd be a really well-formed outcome at that point. So without the context, again, things don't have meaning. If I say I want to be a better communicator and you don't know where, when, and with whom, it doesn't mean a thing. But context does.
So where, when, and with whom?
So we always want to ask these questions as the basic minimum.
So it seems like ecology and checking is all part of want, and checking if they're congruent, if they are anything that they...
That's right. So ecology is the next one, where you're looking at, can you predict a downside? And I'll give you an example. I had a client years ago who wanted to be a motivational speaker. He wanted to travel all over the United States and deliver seminars. And so we went through the present state conditions, went through the desired state conditions. Everything was all checking out until we got to ecology. And I asked him, the ecology question, can you predict a downside to this, or could there be any problem in you achieving your dream? And he paused for a minute and went, well, I have a 1 and 3-year-old.
Yeah.
And he said, if I am out traveling, then I could miss out on their childhood. So we had to go back and readjust his dream, which was he decided he wanted to be a motivational speaker in Sacramento. And he actually built $1 million business for himself in Sacramento, which
interesting
was
interesting guy.
Yeah, very interesting.
He taught me how to rip a telephone book in half, which is impressive.
I wouldn't see you do that.
Piece of cake.
That's another program. Just joking.
It's actually pretty easy if you know how to do it. Well, it's because of the way the paper filaments go. If you try to rip it one way, it won't tear. But if you tear it the other way, it tears pretty easily. And you fan it out a little bit.
Yes.
But it's cool to do at a party. You're messing with me, and you rip it again.
You should see, he does it all the time.
Anyway, I don't do it all the time.
We
always want to ask these kind of questions.
Is he doing motivational speaking his dream as a business, or he's doing something else?
Well, this was like 15 years ago. So he really built it up into $1 million business, and then he left Sacramento and went into Texas and got into corporate America because... You know, so his dream shifted down the road, which dreams do.
It was not exactly what he was processing.
Well, his dream was to be a motivational speaker in Sacramento, and he did that for about 10 years. He built a million-dollar business and then decided he didn't want to live in Sacramento anymore because his family was in Texas. So he moved there and started a different career, which a lot of serial entrepreneurs do. So, and dreams do shift.
But the point is you need to gather these two things before you know what to do. Without this, you're just doing techniques. You're not really. Now, often you can make this assessment really quickly.
And one way to think about it is you can do this conversationally. You can do it as an interview. You can do it. If anybody's a coach in here, this is a great way to start off your coach sessions. And think of it as a conversation with your client or your manager or your coworkers or kids. You just go through and ask all these questions, do an assessment, get their vital signs, find out where they are. Then once you get that present state, then ask what is the desired state. Ask all these questions, which are all part of the well-formedness conditions. They're in your book. Check out ecology. If there is a problem, then you just go back and you readjust the dream to match the ecology, to meet that, and then ask all these questions. And this can be done in, you know, a 15-minute conversation. It can be done in an hour-long coach session if you really want to get thorough with it.
And if you, so when you think about this, what do we do then to close the gap? And we've got a lot of tools. Now, by the way, interestingly, if you just gathered this pretty thoroughly on both sides, half the time people figure out what to do on their own. You know, if you think good coaching is often just this process without any kind of intervention. But we have a lot of wonderful tools to help do that. And so this is where you make the assessment. What is it that needs to happen? So if I came into you and I say, you know, I'm always losing my stuff. You know, like I'll come in the house and I'll put my keys somewhere and I can't find them. What would you put my glasses somewhere and never like, spend an hour trying to find them? What would you do with that? What is that? I'm saying I want a new behavior, right? I'm not talking about a state. I'm not talking about a belief. I'm not talking about anything deep. I'm not talking about a physical ache. I want to do some new pattern, a new habit pattern. So new behavior generators where you do is a good one because it says in the name what you do. You help generate a new behavior with it. What if somebody comes in though and they say, you don't have to give a talk to my staff or I have to give a talk at staff meeting. And there are going to be some senior managers there, and I'm pretty nervous about it. But I do know my stuff, you know. I just feel awkward giving this talk.
Now, there's at least two or three NLP techniques you've learned here you could do to address anxiety. What would you use?
What might you do with that? Circle of Excellence would be an obvious one, right?
Absolutely. And in my coaching practice, I work a lot with executives, and you wouldn't believe how much of just that I do, Circle of Excellence, to help with their state management when they deliver a presentation or they're meeting with the team or go on stage.
So what's another thing you could do? What we did last night, right?
Yeah.
The anchor integration. So anchor the context to be in staff meeting and anchor the whatever resources would help me, take the resources into the staff meeting. Could be that simple. Now, what if I say, yeah, but I've always had this problem ever since, you know, Mrs. Utzinger and the change history.
Good.
Would be, so if you want to change state, you might think in terms of anchoring techniques and often submodality techniques. If you want to change behavior, you might think more in strategies like rehearsals and rehearsing something in a new way. So you want to make that kind of distinction.
Now, there's one other important question to add to this list is once you do your conversation or your interview or your intake or assessment, whatever you want to call it, it's going through all these questions and these questions. Sometimes, as Tim said, the solution will just pop out for whoever you're talking with. They'll know what to do when they start getting clear on what their outcome is. If they don't, there's a magical question you can ask that will help guide the direction for what you should do next, which is, what is stopping you from achieving your goal or outcome? So what is stopping you? And whenever you ask this question, sometimes you might actually hear a belief pop out, and we'll get into the master practitioner training. We spend a lot of time talking about beliefs. We also have it on our Wealthy Mind DVD as well. But sometimes you might hear a belief that pops out, or you know, somebody might just say, I'm nervous or anxiety, you know, I have anxiety. So then you've got some techniques to deal with that, or they'll just say, I don't know what to do. I don't have a strategy or a way, and you can do a new behavior generator. That question, though, is key, is what's stopping you from achieving your outcome or your goal?
So what I really want is to start an exercise program and get fit. You know, it's time to do that.
Okay, well, great.
So assuming she's gathered all this and she says...
So what stops you from doing that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I wake up in the morning and I really want to go out there and exercise. And, you know, I did yesterday, but I looked out the window and it was rainy and blowy and I was cozy in bed. So I knew I should get up and do it, but, you know, I just was too comfortable.
So you were too
But then
cozy.
I beat myself up all day because a little rain wouldn't have hurt me, and I would have started my program that I promised myself. What am I offering you? What would you do with that?
Yes, new behavior.
Well, not.
That can be one.
I don't think it would work yet. What did I?
Motivation.
I really want to, but I. Something's stopping me.
The thing is, does she really want it? You
know, I really want to do it, but I don't want to do it.
Conflict
integration, yeah. If somebody's having a conflict and they're in a real conflict, new behavior generator typically won't work.
That, I see two conflicts. You want to get up and do it, but then the part of you wants to stay in bed. It's a conflict. And then throughout the day, you are... conflicting with yourself.
Yeah. Well, the part of me that wants me to get up and exercise is then says all day long, you lazy, you should have gotten up and do that. And then the next morning I think, I'm going to get up and do it, but then this part takes over and goes, yeah, but it's still not wonderful outside. So you've got some tools to deal with conflicts. How many of you remember this? That's one of the more powerful tools you can do. So whenever you have a conflict and you hear words like but, or I want this, but, that.
What would be some other ways to notice conflicts when you're talking with somebody?
They may not have learned asymmetries.
Okay.
That's all in the master track. You'll learn all the body language for it later in the next program.
Looking for signs of incongruency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really want to quit smoking. Yeah. I think I'm ready for this.
Yeah.
You know. So you hear those kind of tonalities that don't match the... if you listen for those incongruities. So basically, what you want to pay attention to, is there a conflict? Is it a strategy? Is it a state? Or is it a behavior? And if you have those, you're going to get most of the things that come up for people. So those are the questions that would be running through my mind.
Do you even exactly what a strategy?
Yeah. Or is it a belief? I mean, it could be a belief too. So say that again.
Could you give an example for a strategy?
A strategy? Sure, strategist, I don't know how to do it. You know, I really would like to be able to do, I would really like to be able to consistently find my keys, but I haven't found a way to do that. Then you help me do a new behavior generator, and now I've got a new strategy for that.
So the problem is the strategy, or the lack of it?
Yeah, it's not a state that's stopping me. I'm not in conflict about finding him. I just have
a... behavior that's bad. It's just, your strategy is not really resourceful for resolving that.
Exactly. Or let's say I come to you and I go, you know, I can't spell. And so... I don't have a spelling strategy. You say, well, spell philosophy. And I go, and you go, what's down here? And I go, Mrs. Utzinger, my third grade teacher. You know, those kind of things. So instead, you say, well, a good strategy for that would be, you look up, let the memory of the word come in, the whole image, and then does it feel familiar? So you can teach me a strategy. So that's like, I don't know how to do it. If I say, you know, I can't fly an airplane. You think that's a state or a belief or a... And if you say, well, what's stopping you? And I go, well, I've never actually been in an airplane. Then you can say, well, you need to go learn it, right? So that would be an example of a strategy. I just don't have the know-how.
So this is the basic formula. When we do coaching, this is pretty much how we start off our coaching sessions is ask all these questions, get the vital signs, assess where they are, find out what they want, and then find out what's stopping them from getting there, and then deciding on what different approach you want to take, whether it's a technique or helping them create a new strategy.
When you first meet somebody, and you're trying to decipher that, you might unpack 5 or 6 issues, right?
Yep.
I mean, you almost have to unpack them initially because they're all talking all kinds of stuff,
yep.
right? And you just have to kind of get them to pin down.
Yeah.
Yeah, Horacio's comment was that sometimes when we're working with people, we might unpack 5 or 6 issues, and that's true. I know sometimes when I'm working with somebody, I can already see 6 sessions into the future. So if you do coaching work, it's important to write all that stuff down and map it all out so you can remember it down the road. And even if you don't, I know sometimes we work with each other and stuff comes up and we don't have time to deal with it, so we'll write it down and take notes so we can get back to it later.
So with that, often that's when what Horacio is saying, somebody has a big global outcome. So if I came to you and I said, you know, I just want to get fit and healthy. That might mean I need to learn to eat differently. I need to start exercising. I need to think differently. I need to meditate. Maybe there's a whole bunch of things I need to do. So there are whole subsets of goals there. It's not just one thing. And to really get the change down, you need to get this idea of context.
Yeah, this is, we just can't
emphasize that enough.
And it's a hard thing to get for people.
One of the groups I worked with the last few years is I've been working with the psychiatric hospital, basically taking their whole clinical staff through the practitioner and master practitioner. And they, even though they're all really well trained, I mean, these are clinical social workers and psychologists and people like that. So they've had, you know, lots of years of schooling. They still didn't think in terms of context. But without context, something doesn't have much meaning. If I say bark, what does that mean? No, it was a Spanish ship in the 1800s. So that's a real crude example, but think of all the things that, how many of you know people that talk backwards? And they start telling you about something without the context there,
oh, yeah.
And you're kind of scratching your head until they get to the point.
Is that when they like switch words?
Well, but no, it'd be more like if I come and I say, you know, it's really upsetting to me. You know, you wouldn't believe how annoyed I can get when I'm having to deal with those kind of issues. And, you know, it's frustrating because, you know, it's like these people never really get to the point. How many of you are starting to get frustrated with me? It's that kind of, that's why I mean talking backwards. But if I come and I say, you know, when I attend these staff meetings and the staff are trying to come up with a decision, it's really frustrating to me. Now you've got a context to put it in, and everything I say you can attach meaning to. But without the context, it's just going to be confusing.
Or talking around the issue.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
So say I'm Tim's client, and we get to the desired state, and so my goal is, I just want to be happy.
Ah, everywhere?
I have this group of college friends I get together with once a month, and it's just always a real bummer for me. And I
You want to somehow be happy with your college friends?
Well, I want to feel good about myself when I'm with them.
Oh, okay. So you want to feel good about yourself with these people?
Yeah.
So now we have a context, right? I'd want to find out what's going on that she doesn't. Then I can pin it down really. So what do they do that really bothers you?
Well, they just say these joking comments that kind of put me down, and then I feel bad.
Okay, so when they make joking comments like about you or your personality or your way of being?
Well, they're just teasing me, but it seems like a little, like, you know, it makes me feel bad. They tease too hard.
So what would be a concrete example of that?
Well, I went to this party, and when I went to leave in the car, I went to get in the door, and then my friend Randy pulled the car away, so then I went to get in again, and he pulled it away, and I don't know, it made me, like why are you being so awful to me?
So how would you like to deal with that kind of context? Now we know exactly what it is, we can pin down the outcome, right? So how would you like to deal with that specific one and with those that class of things?
Well, I think I'd like to just have a stronger sense of self, because I know if I did, then those kinds of things wouldn't even happen.
Stronger sense of self? Do you know what that is yet? So, notice that's where I can meta model. What would a stronger sense of self be like for you? What do you mean by that?
I'd like myself and feel good about myself in these situations.
Oh, so you really, if you kind of had this background sense of liking yourself, mm-hmm. that would make a big difference.
Oh yeah, huge.
So what's preventing you from that?
Well, my brother always beat me up when I was a kid.
And what's that like? Oh. We'll do a change history then, right? So she told me just what to do.
I actually had a client that this happened to, and we did some beliefs work with it, and it completely transformed her, not only her relationship with her friends, but her family as well. So sometimes, you know, it's funny because you'll work with people and they'll come to you for professional reasons, but a very large percentage of the time you end up digging into childhood events and things that keep them, you know, from their earlier years being their best selves. That's pretty common. So, yes, Dave.
So earlier you said strategy, state, conflict, behavior, belief, and it sounds like strategy is a box. Behavior and belief, in the case you just gave, is another box, meaning they are linked. And that state and conflict are linked. Conflict is a state. Is that correct?
Well, conflict could be different kinds of conflicts, but in a sense, it's a state. It could be conflict of criteria, what's important. You know, I really want to get full, feel full, but also want to eat in a really healthy way. So that could be a conflict. And usually there'll be a state attached to it. Conflicts tend to be the most problematic issues. When I see people that have said, you know, I've done all kinds of work on this, I'll often find an unconscious conflict. Sometimes it's like there's two separate people there.
So what will happen is you're working with somebody and there's two aspects to what's going on, and often traditional coaches or people are only addressing one side. So then they're feeling really good, but then they go out into the world and this pops out. And they're like, well, I thought I worked on that. Well, they worked on one part of it. They worked on this part.
Yeah. Or they say, you know, willpower. How many of you have tried willpower? Does it work? Willpower typically doesn't work. I mean, sometimes people can tough something out, but willpower just means I'm going to have power over some part of myself, and the more you do that, the more it'll build up. Carl Jung used to say, you know, the more you build up one side, the other side's going to build up just as much unconsciously. So you end up just fighting yourself more and more and more. If you integrate it and you find out the positive meta outcome for both sides, so you get them the same and you integrate it the way Susie taught you to do, it's one of the most powerful things you can do. When I'm dealing with major health issues like cancer and stuff, often there are huge conflicts that need to be resolved first.
And not only that, meta outcoming is so important just in everything you do. That's why during the DSR weekend last weekend, we have incorporated it into so many of the processes. How many of you remember what meta-outcoming is? What is meta-outcoming? Because that's another thing that's going to really boost your skills in working with clients. Or again, you can do this conversationally with your children or with your, you know, if you're a manager, with your reports.
Is that the asking as an outcome what that means and what that means?
Well, not what it means. That's you're close. To me, it's one of the most valuable coach questions.
The positive intent.
Yes.
Yeah, it gets the positive intent.
It gets the positive intention.
What will having that do for you?
Isn't that the same as asking what does it mean to you?
No.
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 That's different.
So if I say, well, it could lead to the same place, but it may not. Mm-hmm. So if I say, well, I want to save $25,000 by the end of the year. You say, if you say, what will having that get for you, that's going to take me to one place. You say, what would that mean to you? You might get a belief about it.
Yeah.
So what does it do for you? What does it get for you? What will it allow you to do or have or be? To me, it's like, it's the question that creates the space for change.
Absolutely. And pretty much whenever you finally get the desired outcome, then that's where you would meta-outcome it. So if you have somebody who they want to be more resourceful when they communicate with their children,
go ahead. Okay, go ahead. So if you could feel good about yourself around Randy or mm-hmm. those other people.
The college friends.
What would having that do for you?
Well, I just wouldn't feel bummed out when I'm with them.
Ah, so what would not feeling bummed out when you're with them get for you?
Well, then I'd feel better.
Ah, so if you say better, so now we're starting to go somewhere. So I'd want to know better how exactly. You always want to be able to make a picture of what the person's saying. That's when do you meta model things. So better how?
Well, I just feel good about myself.
Okay, so what does that mean exactly? How? Now we've got evidence. How would you know you were feeling good? So notice how that can take us into the next level of stuff. Nancy, you had a comment.
You kind of said the same thing I was just thinking of. You were talking about willpower, and it just seems like it creates conflict.
Yeah.
And in fact, previously, I was working on with somebody on not eating after 9 o'clock, and I was trying to use willpower. And I felt like I went home and I thought, well, I think I resolved that conflict because I just do it now. It doesn't bother me because it was just willpower and resolve the conflict, and then you just do what you wanted to do rather than getting inside mm-hmm. that. So.
Well, yeah, willpower means you're fighting yourself. And if you're fighting yourself, you're going to fight back. Some party is going to fight back. Remember, behind every behavior is a positive intention. And so if you're trying to snuff something out that has a positive intention, you're probably wiping out something useful for yourself. By the way, what would the positive intention be if you decided to do an exercise program but still laid in bed in the morning? And
being comfortable,
get enough sleep, nurture yourself. I mean, there's all kinds of positive things there. There are people that never do that, and they often end up with health issues because they've always put their needs aside for what they think they should do, right? It's this old heart and head conflict. So, does this give you a better map for what you might, how you might think about what to do when?
And you've got this in your booklets.
But I'd urge you, too, to look in your booklets. I brought some more of these cards. I know some people wanted these.
I'll tell you, I still keep these cards in my desk because once in a blue moon, somebody wants me to do something with them, and I haven't done it in years, and so it's nice for me to pull out the card and just refresh myself on the steps. But they're all organized and categorized. It's basically your whole book that you've got in your lap here in these cards. And we've had some people that have gotten nifty and taken it to Kinko's and drilled a hole in it. Got one of those key rings, and then you can keep it all together. And they're, what are they? $30 or $35? How much are they? Does anyone know?
Damon, $35. And the but so it's actually a lot more than what's in your manual because it's when I've made this in 2011, and the manual we had the program is 18 days long, so there's a lot of other additional things here. But it's a really nice way to stay in touch with those kind of things.
And I have a question I wanted to ask you. Maybe. So yesterday when you were talking about you were going to go into your first topic, I had just had steamed milk, and I was getting real drowsy, and it was just like the beginning of the day, and you were talking about, I can't remember what you were talking about, I was just going to say, what would be if you go to a seminar, or you've got this meeting you got to sit in, and you're feeling like you didn't get your coffee, or you drank steamed milk, and you're starting to kind of doze a little bit, and just your attention is not...
You come in and you're tired to start
with? Yeah, and it's just like you can't get that full focus. What would you do in that moment for yourself to get yourself to a place where you can just...
Okay, Horacio said yesterday when he came in he felt tired. He was trying to get himself into the state, a good seminar state. What would you do? What's the first thing that comes to mind, yeah?
I kind of do something funny, and I don't know if it's part of NLP or not, but... I go to the bathroom, I look myself in the mirror, and I kind of like do a self-talk, and I kind of pump myself up, and that's kind of what I do before I go on stage or do anything like that.
Ah, so you're really doing a submodality shift. You start increasing the speed of your tempo of voice and your...
Yeah, I self-talk. And
that could be like if you're taking a Sudafed or something that was kind of making
sense. Yeah, I self-talk
I was having a physical
so
reaction.
Kind of what
right?
I look in the mirror and I kind of like,
ah. Great comment. One of the things, if you think about, we all have a kinesthetic tempo, right?
Right.
So get a sense of what's your kinesthetic tempo right now? And what can you do to amp it up? Imagine you had this is where they can pretend you had the knob, and Irma's doing that. What if you had a knob and you could turn up the speed a little bit?
Dana had a comment, and then Kevin, and then Sebastian. So go ahead, Dana.
I just learned simply just to stay, change the way you stand.
Oh, yeah. The way you stand. Well, I noticed even today when I walked in, I was just, I mean, you can hardly see it, but I was, and if I just go like that, so yeah, state change, just with the way you stand, physiological shift is excellent.
What you say to yourself can make a difference. Yep. Look around the room, and imagine you're the king or queen, and look around the room and say, these are my people. That's what it does to your state.
Well, and everybody's sitting up straighter than they were, so.
This is a good kingdom, and these are my people.
Yes. Yeah. So, Kevin, and then Sebastian.
I remember this from my own practitioner. It was for a practice session that I had signed up for, and I just step up to the, I think it was Mike at the time, and I tell him, look, I'm just tired, I'm just gonna eat something for the bed. You said you were going to be here. I said, yeah, but I'm just really not in the state. He says, well, I'll set intent to be. Just go to the bathroom, set your intent, grab something to drink, and I'll see you back in 5 minutes. So I was like, okay. I went to the bathroom. I said, okay, I'll set my intent to be present and be there. And I went something to drink, and I was there. It was the best practice session I had.
Setting intent.
So setting intent, physiological shift, submodality shift, and Sebastian, and then Peter?
I asked the same question this morning today because I fell asleep yesterday. You probably didn't notice, of course, but kindly as you are, but I did. And so I asked him, what can I do? And so I liked what he said, and that is explore submodalities of where your attention is in your body. And I found it in my belly. How does it look and how does it turn? And once I knew that, he asked me to turn it faster and slow and see what that does, and then adjust it to the level that you need to be present. And I found myself playing with that this morning, so I want to...
It's a bit of the spin.
Spin my attention faster and slower to be in that kinesthetic rhythm and tempo of being present, because sometimes you just aren't spinning fast enough and you're falling.
Try this. Which way? One way will make you go more relaxed, and one way will make you more alert.
Make sure you do it the alert way when we stop.
Yeah. So which way makes you more alert?
Going
forward. It's sometimes different for different people. I know if I go this way, it works for me.
Yeah, me too.
Well.
But
another thing you can do, you can often just spin that. If you feel fatigue, get a sense of the fatigue, the size, the shape, pull it out. Mm-hmm. Spin it.
Or you could spin it and then do a circle of excellence and then, you know, the state shift that Dana recommended. And that's like for sure going to amp up.
So if you've got intent, you can spin it, you can turn up your kinesthetic tempo.
And one last comment, Peter.
And then that's what I was going to use as a circle of excellence. Actually, every single day, Monday through Friday, I'm in court for something. So every single day, first thing in the morning, circle of excellence, resources, everything I need to walk into that court. It's so good that when I come home, usually Lonnie, my wife, is the first thing she says is, okay, you're not in court anymore, bring it down. And then
not sure if you all know Peter's a lawyer, but he said he uses this when he walks into the courtroom, which is really nice, because I would imagine you'd have to really be a master of state management in those situations. Nice.
Okay.
Well, good. So we have intent, and we have physiological shifts, and state management, circle of excellence, lots of good suggestions. So hopefully, Horacio, you'll have a strategy now. Did that answer your question?
So wake up.
Wake up.
I just wanted him to get us up on, you know, the stretches that you did.
Oh.
I think that was yesterday.
So. That's another question. When you're in a group like this, if you're feeling that way and you're sensing that, make a request.
Or you're always welcome to go back to the back of the room and do some of this. I mean, this is California, you know. I don't think anybody would think much.
In Japan, you might.
Yeah.
People in Japan might not think it was cool, but in a...
You know, here, especially the San Francisco
we can
Bay
do whatever
area.
We want. Okay, take a big breath. Stand up for a second. Let's do a stretch. Did you learn Brain Gym?
My
Brain Gym, G-Y-M. Brain Gym is a thing that was developed by a guy named Paul Dennison from NLP and kinesiology. But It starts out with just do a cross crawl, like this. It's really good to integrate yourself too. And do it slow, elbow to knee if you can. It's hard to do if you're wearing a dress. So. I've observed, I haven't tried it.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Let your eyes follow your hands. Okay. So sometimes you do a big piece of work, it's a really good thing to reground with this. And so that's the first step. Second one is find your collarbones. In about half an inch down from your collarbones, you're going to find some soft spots. Like where somebody, a man might knot a necktie, and just below that, there's going to be soft spots about 3 inches apart. Can y'all feel those?
Yeah.
And if you rub them, for some people, it might be tender. These are your kidney 27 points, by the way. Kidney 27 in acupuncture. Then put your hand over your belly button. Breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. As you breathe in through your nose, touch that ridge behind your front teeth. It's called the sigmoid point. You do that for about 15, 20 seconds. Notice how it grounds you, and you usually get more relaxed and switch. My mom at one time had a mini stroke, and I taught her to do this, and she really, her doctor started calling her the star patient because it made such a difference. These have integrative effects on your two brain hemispheres in a lot of ways. The final one is called the hookup. Cross your legs one over the other. Notice which one's on top. Then cross your arms the same way. Put your hands together. You can let them hang or you can bring them up like this. And then go ahead and breathe in through the nose, out through the mouth in the same kind of way. Then bring your hands, uncross your legs, put your hands together very gently. So you're not pushing, but just lightly touching. So, that's how you feel when you've done that. It's a good exercise. You can do that around all kinds of things. So, if you're interested in that, it's called Brain Gym, GYM. Paul Dennison is the guy that was a primary developer. He's out of Colorado. And it comes from education. And so it was done for children originally, but it works just as well with adults. But you find it all has cute little names, like these are called brain buttons. Because this is really a good way. Have you ever lost something, or you can't, trying to think of something, it's on the tip of your tongue, so to speak, and you can't quite remember? It's like, what was that person's name? Do this for a minute and often. What's that?
Where'd I put my keys?
And it'll often just pop right in. Okay.